When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
He's a gorilla of destiny, a Bullet Club OG, continuing on the legacy of the most feared name in all of wrestling. From Tonga to Japan to America, you are now entering Tama's Island. With your host, the babyface heel, Tama Tonga.
We're live.
Yo, guys, welcome back to Tama's Island Podcast. I'm your host, Tama Tonga, with my man, co-host Ross Berman, the folklore hustler, right? A folk hustler. What do you got? Culture vulture, wrestling hustler.
I got a million names, man. I'm the folk city hustler. I'm the culture vulture. I'm the apparently the Rasputin of New Japan. I don't know. I'm your wrestling
island hustler.
Yep. I'm your island
I
mystic.
Coming up with something new for you. But anyway, guys, welcome back. We got two special guests brought in today from Tama's Island, who also have their own podcast running right now. We'd like to welcome Ashley. What's up, Ashley? How you doing?
Hey, Tama. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Hell yeah. We'd like to have some fun. Let's talk about it. I know you've been kicking it out in wrestling. Was it Chicago this past weekend?
I'm a little lost here.
All right, we're gonna have a lot of talk here. And it's your first time on the island, right?
Yes, it is.
Yes, let's do this. And we got somebody coming back. What's this, your second, third time? What's up? I'm lost. Yeah, that's my man. Okay.
I'm glad I'm not banned yet.
Hey, yeah.
I know.
But guys, thank you for joining us here on Tama's Island Podcast. We've got a lot to talk about today. I hope we run a long ass marathon today, because I know you know Ashley was there live at the event. We got Morgan and I. We kind of reviewed this before all this went down with one particular person that we kind of clowned on because we didn't think he brought the beef anymore, but then he turned up and then like made a fool out of ourselves. But we're going to redeem ourselves here, because we messaged each other and we're like, you know what? We were wrong. Hey, and I'll admit it when I'm wrong, I'll admit it. You know, hey, I was wrong, but we'll get to that here soon.
Yep.
Ross, man, I'm going to hand it over to you. You go ahead and take us through this, man.
Man, it has been a wild weekend in wrestling. Not only have we had two big ass nights in the MetLife Dome in Saitama, with New Japan not only crowning new IWGP Junior Tag Team Champions, but also a number of defenses across the board, as well as Choriano almost stabbed Chase Owens on night one. We'll get into that. It was a crazy, crazy weekend in the MetLife Dome. And not only that, we also got an announcement that the one, the only Tama Tonga is going to be in this year's G1. You're going to be in the B block. You're going to be mixing up with Okada. You're going to be mixing up with Tanahashi. You're going to be mixing it up with Jeff Cobb, with Sonata. You have a stacked lineup to go up against in the B block. How you feeling, Tama?
And they're going to come up and I'm be Tony Inoki their ass, man. I'm going to slap the shit out of them. Backhand over here, palm face right here, backhand over here. With every little bitch there is, maybe Carl Anderson will be back of that line when I come with that backhand. We'll see about that. Eh? We'll talk about that here soon.
everyone's getting backhands. Everyone's getting backhands in the G1. But not only is it the G1, not only was it Wrestle Grand Slam, but it was also All Out Weekend, like you said, here in Chicago, in the Chicagoland area in Hoffman Estates. Not only did AEW have a huge pay-per-view with All Out, but GCW also seemed to have a pretty good coming out party this weekend. But I mean, the big news coming out of this weekend, I mean, just the big steamrolled over everything, like three nuclear bombs dropped in one show. AEW now has Ruby Soho, formerly Ruby Riott, formerly Heidi Lovelace, formerly Sally Stitches, an independent Midwest legend. They also have Adam Cole, baby, who has already realigned with the Elite and seems to have slid right back into where he was right before he died and went off to NXT. And the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, is back. He also made his debut at All Out. And Minoru Suzuki showed up to challenge Jon Moxley. It's been a wild weekend, but let's start at the beginning. Let's start with Wrestle Grand Slam. It was a huge weekend for New Japan. They had some, I think, some pretty damn good shows. We have to lampshade this, Tama. It was a rough weekend for Bullet Club. Chase Owens losing that provisional trophy. The junior tag champs ELP and Ishimori losing the junior tag belts. Evil coming up short against Shingo Takagi. Not the best night for Bullet Club, but House of Torture looking pretty damn strong, and you guys have the most people in the G1, so it feels like y'all are going to be bouncing back from that pretty quickly.
Man, we got to highlight all the losses first, man. Why couldn't you say the other shit? Why couldn't you just flip it around, bring all the positive first? You had to be like a Debbie Downer first. Bullet Club. Oh, shit. Come on, Ross, man. I thought we were teammates. I thought we were co-hosting this shit together.
We are co-hosting,
Ross. Shit.
Look, I'm on your team. You know, if anyone that's listened to this podcast, no, I'm on your team 100%, but they also know that it's my job to bring up when the bad shit happens. And some bad shit happened this weekend for Bullet Club. But damn, if it wasn't a hell of a show. I think the way House of Torture kind of showed up to back up Evil really speaks well to their cohesion, considering the fact that they've been a team for less than a week. So that is already a very solid unit. It definitely feels like Wrestle Grand Slam was a return to form. We got the G1 coming back. We got Shingo Takagi on a very dominant run with the IWGP World Title, a belt that, I mean, for lack of a better term, kind of bounced around in the summer, and so now it's finally back on someone's waist. But let's talk about I want to talk about this match. Personally, Chase Owens versus Toru Yano. Last week, I had actually said I thought Yano had screwed up. I thought that he picked a stipulation that favored Bullet Club and was going to ensure that Chase Owens left with that KOPW 2021 provisional trophy. But shock of shocks, return of returns, most violent players version of Yano with the blonde hair, with the weapons galore, with a pair of scissors threatening to stab Chase Owens. I mean, that was a brutal match. That was a brutal match in the Tokyo Dome, Tama.
It caught me off guard, to be honest with you, Ross. I wasn't expecting this Yano to come back. I was expecting the honey ha fa fa ha ha, you know, googly eye, funny man, no blonde hair Yano. And you've actually mentioned this before. You know, you've always brought up his credentials. He is a legit guy. And I was like, man, that's a pass. He's not capable of that anymore. And I was wrong, man. But you know what? I'll give it to Yano. You think he's going to keep that? Is he going to keep that? I don't know. We got the G1 here. Are we going to see funny Yano? I want to see funny Yano so we can slap him around easily. But, you know, but we'll see, man. I want to see if this is serious. Did Yano turn a corner? Is he back to the old Yano? What's going on here? It's chaos, man. Yo, they're kind of funny ha-ha right now, aren't they? Mm-hmm. They're a squad. Bit. They lost the man here, lost the man there. They can't keep any guys. I mean, they're going to need some seriousness around here. That's what I think. I think y'all are trying to step up a little bit, you know, bring back some like back to the group. I'm just thinking, Ross.
I'm completely with you. Like I said last weekend, I thought that this was not going to be Yano's match, and I was also proven wrong. But I think you're right about chaos. As I personally, I'm a lifelong Cubs fan, love the Cubs. But if you've been paying attention to the Cubs over the past few months, they've lost everyone. Everyone that made the Cubs who they were in 2016 when they finally won the World Series are all now either on the Yankees, the Mets, they're everywhere but the Cubs. And I think the Cubs, they got like one guy left who I'm sure is going to be a free agent soon. And that seems to be where chaos is at right now. Ever since Jay White took Gato and Jotto, it has been just a slow bleed for chaos as they lose guys like Show. They lose guys like Jay White. They really do seem to be...
Go back. Say that again. Go back. What'd you say?
I said when Jay White left for Bullet Club and he took Jotto and Gato with him, and then Show also left for Bullet Club.
When Tomatonga brought in Jay White, Jotto, and Gato. That's what you meant to say.
Yep.
Okay, I got you.
Yep. No.
When Tomatonga brought over Jay White, Jotto, and Gato. All right. You go ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When your scouting led to chaos kind of retreating into main unit, like them and the main unit right now seem to be very hunky dory as a way to kind of protect each other. But it feels like chaos is on the ropes. I want to kind of throw. I see Morgan's kind of like he's biting his fist. I think he kind of wants to chime in. Morgan, what do you kind of think of the state of chaos post 2018? I guess is when we can start this slow bleed.
You mean what's left of chaos, right?
Yeah, exactly. Chaos,
there's not much there.
Yep.
There's okay. All right. I don't really have much to say about that except it's kind of painful. Mm-hmm. It's definitely like painful to watch, especially like we talked a couple episodes ago about a unit that was just forming and how there were some guys kind of left in the wind right now. Chaos kind of feels like it's flapping in the wind. Its flag is half torn, maybe in tatters. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it dissolves. Maybe we see something else kind of come out of the ashes. But I will say that of the weekend, I think Sho and Yo's match was absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Brutal at times. Very brutal. So really great to see a different side. You know, I know Rocky had hoped that they would work it out in the ring and kind of just be all cohesive afterwards, and that clearly didn't happen. So that was also really great to see. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Chaos hasn't had the last 3 years, right, in the G1. How's Chaos fared pretty well? Not great, right? No.
Not great. No, I mean, main unit, it's basically like the past few G1 finals have either been main unit versus main unit or like main unit versus Bullet Club. Like, there's not a lot, like, and even if we're talking about current chaos, I mean, night one of Wrestle Grand Slam, Yo loses to Sho. Sho goes off, joins House of Torture. Okada, who is the franchise face of Chaos, I would think, if I'm looking at Chaos, also loses to Jeff Cobb. So they're not on the winning side, so to speak, right now. And it does feel like the future is kind of cloudy for the boys over in Chaos.
Now remind me this is the same Jeff Cobb we were talking about last time that is here in. Is not Will Ospreay, because I still don't see a Will Ospreay on the G1 card. I still don't see anything going on. I don't see anything. So, you know,
To be fair, Will Ospreay is very busy in North America. He's going to be on the New Japan Strong tours. He's even promising that he's going to have a mystery partner in one of the matches that's coming up this fall. So there might be a new United Empire member coming. But I'm with you. It does feel like Jeff Cobb and Great O'Khan, to that matter, have become the dominant forces of the United Empire now that Hanare is seemingly trapped in New Zealand and Will Ospreay is kind of off on his victory lap in North America, claiming to be the real champion. I don't know. Ashley, what do you kind of think of the state of the United Empire right now? It feels like the momentum is either shifting or it's leveling off, maybe.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because they were getting off to a really hot start with Ospreay and when they branded, and I feel like now it's just kind of in limbo.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. it feels like Okan and Cobb are kind of working even harder to make sure that their part of the United Empire stays as dominant as the United Empire was when they had Osprey, when they had Hinari, when they were at full strength. And I like, you know, everyone keeps talking about how there are all these subgroups in Bullet Club. Is there going to be a schism? I feel like United Empire, even outside of Chaos, United Empire is the one that feels like the closest to a schism right now. It feels the most like they could break apart at any moment, because like they barely got started, and then all of a sudden all the members got scattered to the wind. And so Osprey's doing his thing alone. Yes, he might have a new guy coming in to join him at some point. Hinare is on Twitter doing his thing alone, and the only ones that are really making a stand, especially now that we're heading into the G1 where they aren't going to have to face each other, Okan's in A block, Cobb is in B block, and so they are poised to really be the showcase talents of this group. I don't know. We're still kind of working on the status of Hinare right now. Part of it's travel, part of it he might be dealing with an injury. We're not sure, but Cobb and Okan seem to be leading the United Empire.
It's obvious they're struggling. You guys don't see that. And you're right. You both are right. They just started. Their man, their top man just became a champion, had to vacate it because of injury. But now we're in the G1. He's not in it, right? He's not in it, but he's doing other work in America. So they're separated. And when you start a group up, you got to stick together to build that foundation, especially on your first year really trying to push through. And if that doesn't happen, you're disintegrate. And Cobb right now has the power is shifting towards Cobb, because he's the man, he's the veteran, he's done it longer, he's older. I mean, he's really proven it time after time again against Shingo, against Okada. He's really, like, really stepping up. And Oka's becoming the second in command, because when Osprey was up, who's that? Cobb was second in command, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Oka was kind of like the brute brawler kind of...
And Oka's like, he's the personality too. Like right now, like he stands in the middle of the ring yelling, calling everyone peasants. Like he has a presence.
Right. But here's the part now. Now that Cobb is stepping into that first, you know, to be the first guy, be the number one, Oka's got to, the personality is great, but you got to be like second in command. You got to be the underboss. What does that mean? You got to be a sergeant to keep everybody in line. You got to be a strength. You got to be a right-hand man that when things step up, you got to be the one to check everybody. You got to check. You got to lean on you. Ishii was like a underboss, right? So you got to have a strong guy. And Oka stepping in. Osprey, unfortunately, is falling. And the way I look at it from here, I'm happy because this makes my group even better now that we're starting. Now everybody's got questions right now, right? What's this thing going on here with the House of Torture? House of Terror.
No, House of Torture. Yep, I tripped up.
I'll take both, man. I like two. I like both of them. But either way, it's hot, man. It's hot. Okay? Hashtag hot. So, I you know, we are running two countries at the same time, and we're going back and forth and trying. We are the biggest faction in New Japan. Shit, we're the biggest faction in all the world right now, right? Mm-hmm. I would think. How many guys? I'm trying to think of any promotion that has this many guys in it.
I mean, hell, even when the NWO was running two countries, they weren't at like they weren't quite at this size. Like it was still kind of like maybe half a dozen, maybe a dozen or so.
We are running strong. So the only possible logical way is to create a subgroup. Now, what is the difference between now and back then that caused a civil war? This shit is in-house. The other shit wasn't created in another promotion. The other subgroup wasn't created in ROH. This is created in New Japan and is allowed by us. I'm with it. I like it. Now everybody asks me, is Evil making play? Hey, I approve of what's going on right now. Because if you think of the future, Ross has pointed out on Twitter. Ross gets it. You guys got to pay attention to his Twitter, man. He gets it. He gets it.
Cough at Ross W. Berman IV on Twitter.
Where were we? Oh, I'm sorry. I took that shit away and brought it back to Bullet Club. My bad. Yep. All right. Well, we're talking about Yano, how it sucks. And the chaos.
No, we were talking about because you do bring up a good point. Bullet Club running two sides. Bullet Club needs to be as big as possible. And frankly, the other other factions should probably be joining suit. It's not great that they're bleeding talent. But do Japan not? We got to talk about the main event though, because I will say, if we're going to be talking about House of Torture, and we're going to be talking about the strength of Bullet Club at the moment, the only reason Shingo Takagi was able to retain his title against Evil on Sunday morning, Sunday night, depending on which time zone you were in, is because for the first time in seemingly, I don't know, 2-3 years, LIJ remembered that they're a team and actually ran in to help Shingo Takagi. He was overcome by House of Torture. But it does create this... It does create the conversation that it took all of LIJ to defeat one of Bullet Club's subgroups. And so if I'm Shingo Takagi, I don't know if that new unity is everything I'm going to need from the fact that Bullet Club is getting real big, Suzuki-gun's getting real strong. Like, yes, LIJ is united, but that they only stay united for so long. They seem to, from time to time, forget their friends. Am I wrong, Tom?
How does that work? How does a guy become a champion and not the leader of their group? How does that work? Does the champion stand down? I mean, like, is this like, how does that work? To me, shouldn't Shingo be the leader? And that's just me. I'm asking the question here. What, you guys, Ashley, Morgan?
No, I think. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 100% with it, because, like, I don't see the Naito promos where you're like, oh, well, going to give it up to my man Shingo, who won the belt. You know, Shingo's closing the shows. So the weird thing is, like, the last time LIJ expanded was when they brought in Shingo.
Yep.
And we all thought that there was going to be more people coming in through that, right? The problem is it's only five guys that definitely, sure, they're a group. They don't work as a family, though. The thing about Bullet Club is family. That's the whole thing. If I'm wrong,
no, you're not.
Somebody
you're,
tell me, but I'm not.
You're not.
You get to stay. I'm not going to kick you out. I like that. You stay in there. Yeah. You can stay in the podcast.
No, that's why Bullet Club's able to have. Yet. Yeah, that's why Bullet Club's able to have subgroups, because you can have subgroups in the family. Sometimes, you know, sometimes the brothers get along better than the sons and the fathers and that kind of thing. But it definitely feels like LIJ is dealing with the fact that, I mean, to borrow a phrase from Living Color and also AEW, Naito has that cult of personality that kind of sucks people in. Like, Shingo's running around with the belt, but Naito's still the center of LIJ. Hell, he's in a tag team with Sonata, where Sonata is seemingly, like, shrunk in behind Naito. Like, he's hiding behind Naito during all of the promos. Like, finally, I have someone who can, you know, deliver a little bit of that personality that I keep telling people I'm not quite sure is there. It does feel like Naito is the, whether he's got the belt, whether he doesn't, because hell, he lost on Sunday. Him and Sonata went in a triple threat tag team match against Yoshihashi and Goto and Zack Sabre Jr. and Taichi, and they came very close, but they still lost, and yet Naito is that, he's that center of the group right now, and that's definitely something to contemplate. I don't know. It feels like LIJ needs to kind of figure out their group structure. Thomas Island listeners, as guys, so much of our identity is wrapped up in our hair, from how it feels after getting a fresh cut to the way it's perfectly styled before we go out, and then we get into our 20s and our 30s and we start to notice those first signs of hair loss. Oh, it definitely starts to feel like panic time. Because let's face it, no guy ever really wants to go bald, but thankfully, there's now an easy way to keep your hair with Keeps. Did you know that 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35? The only way to really prevent hair loss is to do something about it while you still have hair left. And Keeps makes it very easy. You don't have to go to your doctor's office for hair loss prescriptions. Now, all you have to do is visit a doctor online, get your hair loss medication delivered right to your home, and start now. That's right, they make it easy, and they deliver your medication every 3 months, so you can say goodbye to hanging out in the pharmacy checkout lines and all those awkward doctor visits. And also, they have the only two FDA-approved hair loss products out there. You may have tried them before, but you've never tried them for this price. Again, you have to start while you still have hair left to save, and treatments can typically take between 4 to 6 months, so it's important to act fast. And if you want that first month free, go to keeps.com/Tama. That's right, keeps.com/Tama for your first month free. Head on over to keeps.com and keep the hair you have while you still have it. All right. Let's get to
Empire too. They need to figure out
this. United Empire needs to fit. Like, really, the only ones who like seem to know who they are right now are Bullet Club and Suzuki-gun. Like, Bullet Club, they've got the subgroups. They seem to have a hierarchy. They seem to have a structure to them. Suzuki-gun has less of a structure, but, like, Minoru Suzuki's over here in America. We'll get to that when we talk about All Out. And they're still like, yeah, no, we're good. The boss is away, and we've still figured out how to maintain the unit. And so there's a reason those two are the most popular factions in Japan right now. I mean, like I said, Shingo and Takagi did 700 more people than Tanahashi and Ibushi. I mean, if that's not a blow to main unit, I don't know what is. But let's talk about the rest of the weekend, because while New Japan had a big weekend, and yes, the G1 announcements definitely kind of caught everyone by surprise, we also had a big weekend here in North America, here in Hoffman Estates. Let's talk about All Out, because it was a hell of a show. I'm sitting, you, if you've listened to the podcast, you know I'm something of a cynical asshole from time to time, and every now and then I will be a wet blanket or two on all of the joyous stuff that's going on in AEW and with North American wrestling. Don't get me wrong, there's always room to improve, but I don't have a lot of cynicism in me. What we saw on Sunday night was a joyous moment for the wrestling world. Ashley was there. She was in the room. She was in the room with all that energy. Ashley, how was All Out? How was the Now Center or the Now Arena in Hoffman Estates for that show?
It's indescribable. The energy in there was just it's cliche, but it was electric. Everyone was so happy to be there. I actually had one of my buddies join us because we had an extra ticket, and he's not a wrestling fan. He's watched a little bit of WWE, but doesn't really pay attention to anything. And he was getting involved because he's like, everyone is so enthusiastic, and he loves Orange Cassidy. That's his guy. But you know, he was really engaged and with the debuts that happened at the end with Ruby Soho, of course, and Brian and Adam Cole. He was like, holy shit, like WWE is in trouble. Because I was giving him the backstory of everything as the night was going on. And like, he realized the magnitude of kind of what occurred coming from, like, he had a different perspective. He's not, you know, he's not involved in any of this. So it just, everyone had a great time. It's amazing.
That's fantastic.
Ashley, I have a question for you.
Yeah, what's up?
Did you get an ice cream bar?
I did not get an ice cream bar.
Damn.
Yes. The merch lines were crazy.
That's why I was here. I saw some videos, not from Now Arena, but when they did when Punk debuted in AEW at the United Center, literally half the arena like files out after his promo just to go stand in line. Like, oh, they got the Punk shirts now. I can go get them. But yeah, those ice cream bars provided by the pretty cool ice creamery here in Chicago, Illinois, over in Logan Square. Like I said, when he debuted, the ice cream bar is a very good symbol of AEW understanding. Not everyone's going to care about Punk. Not everyone's going to care about Bryan Danielson or Ruby Soho, or like with your friend, someone who has never dealt with a lot of wrestling in the world. They know what ice cream means. They know what a good ice cream bar is worth. Now, yes, they didn't give out the free ice cream at the Now Arena, but the fact that it's still available, the fact that they are still saying that we're the ice cream promotion is definitely, it's a good sign. It's very, oh, yeah. It makes me happy. It makes me joyous.
Sorry,
I was going to say one thing that I thought was pretty cool too was I was leaving the bathroom and this woman started talking to me. She was in a CM Punk shirt and she's like, what match are you most excited for tonight? And I was like, well, obviously Punk. I'm like, but I'm really pumped to see the Young Bucks. And she's like, who are they? And I was like, they're in the team match. And she goes, I'm a WWE fan. She goes, I've never watched AEW, but Punk is here, so I'm here. And I'm like, wow. Like, I just thought that was really cool because she jumped over. I'm like, you're going to have a great time because AEW shows are always fun. But like, I was taken aback at first. But I'm like, that's just shows the magnitude of what's happening.
Yep. No, you're spot the hell on. If someone is going to All Out, the biggest show in AEW history, it's also their, I mean, this is like their WrestleMania. That's like going to WrestleMania and being like, I don't know who Vince McMahon is. Like the Young Bucks are, they run that company, and there are people that are just like, I'm here for Punk. That's amazing. Yeah. That is the best news I've heard out of the weekend. Like, that anecdote right there is just absolutely spectacular. Morgan, what'd you think of the show? Just free associate. We'll get into the deeper parts in a second, but what comes to mind when I say All Out to you, Morgan?
I mean, they went all out. Let's be candid. They did not. There was no punches held back on anything. And obviously, you know, I told you before we went on air, now I get to go see Minoru Suzuki stateside, which is something that is on my bucket list because first, that was, to me, that was like, oh, all right, there is no more division. It's all it's all WWE playing their stuff in their field. Everyone else, again, as I said before, I think the last two times I was on, when everyone eats together, that's the best thing because everyone makes money, right?
Yep.
So.
No, and I'm glad you brought up Suzuki because it's a good highlight of just how well presented the night was. Because Ashley's friend isn't alone in that arena. There are plenty of people that were at All Out who either don't know the Young Bucks, and let's be real, if you don't know who the Young Bucks are, I'm going to also assume you don't know who Minoru Suzuki is. Like, you know, there are people that didn't know who he was, but you listen to that reaction, and it proves that it doesn't matter if someone knows who they are. You treat someone like a big deal, they will get reacted to like a big fucking deal. Because when Jon Moxley beat Satoshi Kojima in one hell of a, just a battering G1-style match, that music hit, the crowd went crazy, the two of them went out there, delivered some elbows, the same way they did in the Tokyo Dome at Wrestle Kingdom, was very reminiscent of that, and the crowd went freaking nuts, whether they knew who he was or not. I mean, what did you think of Kojima and Suzuki getting love from the Hoffman Estates crowd, Tama?
Oh, I loved it. It's great. It's nice to see the American fans like, just bring that love in. And they are a great representation of New Japan. And I watching the reaction, their match, it was just, it gave me like just chills, man, to see, you know, I work with both of them here.
Yep.
Right. And it's every day. And you kind of get in this like routine, but then like, and it just becomes normal. But then to see that happen on an All Out show, on a pay-per-view show in another country, in your home country, and you're like, oh shit. Like the love for them, you just appreciate it.
Especially with a guy like Kojima, who he's one of the most positive Twitter presence you'll ever find. But also the fact that like for a while now, it's been his job to have matches with Young Lions. It's been his job to really help the younger generation get used to the New Japan ring. And so to see him kind of come back from sort of a trainer emeritus role and still be treated like a big ass deal in the States, that is, again, you present someone like a big deal, they will be treated like a big deal. He was just celebrating on Twitter today. He grew his following by like 5,000 plus people because they saw him on AEW and were like, I'm in on Bread Club. Bread Club is growing stronger.
I think he was carrying like 10 loaves of bread on his way out of the arena.
No, he's loading up
him with bread.
He's loading up on bread and Panda Express, man. That's his North American diet. And I could not be happier for him. I could not be happier for Suzuki, who's apparently going to be sticking around doing some. He's going to be on Dynamite this Wednesday. He's going to be in GCW when they're making their run. So it might have been the summer of Punk, but it's going to be the autumn of Suzuki. It's going to be a fun time. But Suzuki, not the only big surprise at this year's AEW All Out. Another big surprise, depending on how much you've been following her Twitter, is the one, the only Ruby Soho making basically a hometown debut. She's a Midwestern gal who has pretty much carved her legacy on the Midwestern indie scene and getting one hell of an ovation. I'm going to throw to you, Ashley, again, that Ruby Soho reaction when she debuted as the Joker in the Casino Battle Royal. How was that? How was the arena for that?
That was really special. I don't watch WWE at all, so I know Ruby Soho, I know Ruby Riott, but I'm not like super familiar with a lot of her work. But the crowd was chanting for her throughout the match, and then, so you know, it was expected. But once her music hit and it was finally announced that she was the Joker, I mean, everyone lost it, and you could see how happy she was coming out. And like, you see the her saying hi to Bryce Remsburg after the match, and just to be a part of that and to see such a warm welcome, like, I felt for her. I thought that was really amazing, and I think she's going to thrive here. I'm so excited to see you know, what's to come.
When she's not only someone who brings a lot to the ring, she's also someone who behind the scenes is very good at helping kind of guide a division. I mean, I'm still getting a little emotional, because like I remember I used to play music on shows before Ruby Soho would wrestle on like freelance wrestling. She would wrestle under a mask as Sally Stitches, because she technically wasn't supposed to wrestle in Chicago for anyone but AAW. She was like, I believe in freelance enough that I'm going to do it. And now she's getting this 10,000 person reaction in the Now Arena. It's just very, very beautiful stuff. It's very much good things happening to good people. Morgan, what did you think of Ruby Soho's debut?
It was a moment, and even when you, I can't wait for a major title run. Mm. I mean, a national title run on national TV for her would be the crowning achievement of everything she's worked for. From what people who I know who have met her have said, that she's one of the most just positive people that you'll ever meet. And it's really refreshing seeing the fan reaction. As I mean, we, you know, it's kind of cliche that everyone who has kind of had their future endeavors from WWE considers it a prison, right? And to have those proverbial shackles taken off someone and then come over anywhere, if it's, you know, New Japan, AEW, and just see the general positivity and the happiness, there's just such a shift there. And that's what I'm more excited for, is that these people finally get to have that moment of, I get to go make money, and I get to go have fun, and I get to go do my thing. That's great. To me, that's what wrestling should be. It should be everyone getting their ideas. And Ruby is someone who, I can't wait to see I can't wait to see Ruby versus Britt.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to be honest. Yep. I saw her in WWE, and she wasn't getting the reaction like she got coming out to AEW. Yep. I've seen her come out of the WWE, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. She was with two other girls, right? They were the Riot Squad. And okay. But then right before she came out of AEW, she was putting out stuff on Twitter. She did like a trailer, and I was like, oh, that's kind of dope. Mm-hmm. You know, the way she presented herself like bigger, like a big deal. And I was like, the way they did it, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Nobody's doing it like that. And I was like, well, you know, few. Yep. But then when she came out on AEW and the pop, I was like, what the fuck?
It was true. No, I'm glad you brought up her video too, because like, everyone's been doing the jailbreak. Everyone's been doing, you know, the Joker, I've left the asylum thing. And so it's like, everyone has basically branded themselves an ex-con, whether their character is one or not. And so this was Ruby Soho really saying like, no, this is who I'm going to be. I'm running away. Like, it's even on her trunk. She's the runaway. She's the one who got away from WWE. And the fact that she was able to really market that song to the point where when that pop happens, the only thing the song has said is Destination Unknown. Her name hadn't even shown up on the screen yet. People just heard that song and knew it's her. It's finally her. This is not a song she has ever entered to in WWE. This is just through her Twitter and through the fact that people know her and Rancid go back, she was able to get that Ruby Soho song to the point where from the name that tune, first note, people were losing their minds. And you love to see it. It really, really excited to see what they'll do. And they didn't waste it either. If you watch that Battle Royal back, the person she ends up going to the end with is Thunder Rosa, who is one of the most popular women on the world on the wrestling scene today. I mean, the year Thunder Rosa's had is amazing, and so to immediately put Ruby and Thunder Rosa right on that level and to really spark people's imaginations like that tells me that they were trying to make more moments than just the win. They wanted to really immerse her in this group, and I just, oh, a beautiful moment. She's gonna be facing Jamie Hayter on Dynamite, and so we will see what is next for Ruby Soho. But man, she was not the only tattooed punk rocker. That
how many times are we gonna say this, Rasa? But man, oh, I know. She wasn't the only.
And no, yeah. So that's the thing.
All out was more surprises for you guys.
She wasn't the only tattooed punk rocker making a big ass return. Look, CM Punk, baby.
Hey, and that's what I love about this All Out pay per view. Yep. From top to bottom, they kept your interest. Your attention span was constantly checked. Mm. You know, they constantly. It's like running a 400-meter relay, right?
Yep.
You got your first leg, second, third, fourth. And the whole show, the first from the beginning, that the Eddie Kingston match was like, everybody was hot. The whole people, an elbow caused a reaction. People was just nuts. And so you just stack it. And in between, they kept throwing these surprises, right? And you're just like, holy shit. And it kept the energy up, you know? And then, you know, now they got to, now I might get a little ahead of myself. They got to the semifinal, right? The semifinal.
Mm-hmm. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I could tell on social media there was a lot of people that kind of, it was like they weren't really looking forward to it. I'm not gonna name the wrestlers because I got mad respect for both of them. I'm not saying that they're bad or anything, but people were just kind of like not interested. But in a relay, right, your third leg is always like the slow piece because your fourth leg is the fastest one to take it back. You got everybody interested. So when you look at that card, right, they kept everybody's interest at peak, and they were just like peppering in surprises. Then the end. So I kind of went ahead of you. Sorry, Ross.
No, that's fine. Because you brought up the main point that I was going to get through with CM Punk. Is CM Punk comes back. He has a pretty good, it's a great match with Darby Allin. It's very understated, a good kind of showcase. And then let me just make sure I'm covering this right. Because I believe after CM Punk versus Darby Allin, that was when we had the semifinal match, which I did want to talk about because I was also one of those people that was like, what the hell is this match? I don't know if this is necessarily the match that I thought it was going to be. Hang on, I'm trying to pull up the card here. Because the semifinal match that we're talking about is, of course, QT Marshall versus Paul White in a match that supposedly they didn't have a time limit. According to backstage reports, that match was going to go however long they needed it to go, depending on how much time was left in the pay-per-view. And I think it was a very smart place for it, because by the end of Punk and Darby Allin, I was burnt the hell out. I needed a minute to like collect my thoughts. And quite frankly, watching QT Marshall just get a quick choke slam from Paul White, exactly the kind of palate cleanser I need between the big ass show and the giant main event. So I was originally a person who supported that. I, you know, don't get me wrong, I thought it was a weird match, but I was like, all right, these are two guys that I'm gonna like. But where it was placed, I think really made the show.
You could see it in the final match with Kenny Omega, that the people were like tired. You're running like a 3 hour, like 3 hours and 50 minutes show, and people were tired. The match wasn't bad. It was a great match. But the people who were fucking tired.
And not only were they,
you can only scream for so long, right?
Yep. They did a tailgate before with a beer garden. So
you're running a marathon when you go to a wrestling show. It's a marathon, people. Yep. It's not like 3 hours. It's like the whole day.
I just remember being at TakeOver when Nakamura won the belt, and we were all, by the end of that show, everyone did not have a voice. And every water bottle in the area of Brooklyn was sold out for like a specific thing, because we were chanting for Rude, we were chanting for Nakamura, you know, everyone had lost their voice. So it is definitely a marathon, but a 4 hour, 5 hour, and then fan fest and whatever, all, you know, then everyone chanting, it all compounds, the energy burns off. So I agree with you, Ross. And I thought that match was fun. I like watching QT Marshall get his ass whooped. But that's just me.
Yeah, no, I've said it many times. I'm waiting for the hindsight era when we can all admit that QT Marshall is doing great. Please, everyone, stop being so hard on him.
He's phenomenal. He's a phenomenal heel. I mean, like, honestly, him and MJF are two of the best heels in the company.
Yep. I completely agree with you. But also, to the point of that main event, not only was the crowd tired, they also knew we've got at least one or two more surprises to come, because everyone went into this weekend knowing we're going to get Bryan Danielson. And then all of the contract stuff made it clear that, oh my God, we might be getting Adam Cole as well. And so they're watching this very good match between Kenny Omega and Christian Cage and thinking about everything but the match. Like, they're bringing out tables, they're bringing out interference. Like, Omega and Christian did everything they could to hook that crowd back in, but they're all like, all right, get this over with so we can get to more debuts. You've given us so many debuts, I'm fiending. Come on, give me one. I need another one right now. And so Kenny Omega defeats Christian Cage. Like we said, a real good match. I think the Rampage match had a bit more of that edge but this was a great match.
Ross, I don't want to jump ahead of CM Punk and the Darby Allin match, because we're gonna back it up a little bit, because I really enjoyed that match.
Okay,
I felt that CM Punk never missed a step.
Nope.
I really liked what they were performing. I have a lot more respect for Darby Allin of his work. And just the selling, the timing, everything what they did was just, it was money, man. I really enjoyed their match. I was wrong. Hey, this is my second week apologizing that I was wrong about CM Punk, and this will be finally it. All right. But I was wrong about CM Punk. He wow. That, like, he still got it, man. He never missed a step. 7 years, was it? Out of the ring, came back, and just kept popping, man. And that's respect for a worker, man. Got my respect, CM Punk.
Hell yeah. That's hard won on this show. Let's be real. It's hard. That is hard won respect to CM Punk. Cheers. Cheers to him raising a Red Bull. Sorry, go ahead, Morgan.
I messaged Thomas. Thomas said, and I said, I was wrong. I said, all right, when I come back, if I come back, I'm going to say it. I was wrong. The chemistry was there, but I the first thing I did was I said, all right, whatever. I was wrong. Fine.
And it was great. It's all right to admit that you're wrong. You're human. We all make mistakes, right?
Yeah. But it was great to be wrong too. Cause like there was points in the match where it felt somewhat slow for me for a CM Punk match, and then it hooked me back in, and that felt great. And even what they did before with Sting, where Sting's like, I'm going to stay in the back, fist bump him, I'm going to leave. The fact that they planted that there, the fact that this was going to be one-on-one, phenomenal. So
a little thing that they did at the end, this is what I saw with Darby Allin. After Darby lost, right, it's the way he sold. After Sting came in, checked the CM Punk. Okay, cool. Everybody, all right. But Darby Allin was still selling. You know, it's little things. And if you pick up, as a worker, right? If you're a wrestler and you're watching this, watch the little things, little details that Darby, because Darby just didn't get up and walk back like he didn't get his ass beat. He was selling. And then they got out of the ring. And then Sting being like, this made me like realize the kind of like situation that they're giving to us. Sting is like a father figure in the wrestling world for Darby. And of course, we've talked about this before, but you could really see it right then when Darby came outside, and then Sting is helping him up all the way while Darby's still selling. that's great work, man. That's really fine details like that. And I'm like, I really like that.
Good shit. No, it's we'll go into this when we get through all of the surprises, but it was a good example of AEW making sure that one of their big debuts or returns doesn't overshadow all of the work they've done so far. Because this could have been Punk's moment. Punk won his first match in 7 years, and instead he's shaking hands with Sting and standing there with Darby and Sting like they're a trio. And so the way that they blended that group together immediately after the match gave me a lot of hope for the way they're telling stories. I gotta ask, Ashley, you were there for the Punk Darby Allin match. It sounded, surprisingly enough, like the crowd was pretty split, at least in the opening stages between Punk and Darby. Was that the audio, or was that legit?
No, that was legit, and I was actually surprised by that. Obviously, Darby is beloved throughout AEW, but Punk is beloved throughout Chicago. So I thought it was going to be a little more divisive, but it was pretty split, which is good to see, though, that Darby was able to maintain that. I didn't know if he was going to work heel, play things dirty, but it was a good match. I have to give the show another watch, because being there, I was just like in the moment and paying attention to like the body language and the chance and everything. So I didn't get a chance to like analyze all the matches too much, but that's it fun. Was very balanced in terms of the crowd reaction.
And that kind of warmed my heart, because I was originally saying that like CM Punk has to win or else they're going to burn down Chicago if Darby wins. But the way that crowd was.
I don't think they would have.
Exactly. Yeah. I think AEW has done a very good job of keeping their stars, even in the wake of bringing in people that like many have said are bigger than that. And so let's rip the Band-Aid off. Let's talk about the final two after Christian Cage versus Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega essentially says no one can beat him. The only people that are around that could beat him are either retired, not in the company, or already dead. Lights go out. Cue the ghost of Adam Cole with his Bebe chant and all, getting a hell of a reaction from Hoffman Estates. And then immediately super kicking, I believe it was either Christian Cage or Jungle Boy, one of the faces, and rejoining with the Elite, picking up right where he left off before he headed on over to NXT. I'm going to start with you, Ashley, because you were there. What was the reaction like for Adam Cole? I mean, that's the loudest I've heard the Bebe chant, I think, since like a takeover, at least.
I think, speaking for myself, that took me by surprise. Not the reaction, but him coming out. Because like you said earlier, we all kind of anticipated Bryan Danielson to be making his debut. So at the end of the night, that's when everyone started chanting for him. There were no Bryan chants earlier in the show, but when the lights went out, I think that's what everyone was expecting. And then when you saw Bebe pop across the screen, it was like, holy shit, I can't believe this is happening. But then you have that feeling of, well, we're still going to get Bryan. Like, is this still going to happen? How is this going to end? So, I mean, it was a very genuine surprised reaction, but everyone was pumped.
Yeah, no, it was a very big moment for Adam Cole returning. And then as soon as Adam Cole made it clear that he is not there to challenge Kenny Omega, someone else made it clear that they'll be there to challenge him. It seems like Daniel, like we said, formerly Daniel Bryan, now Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, once again entering to a trap remix of Flight of the Valkyries that is divisive on Twitter. I like it. You can really move to it. Yeah. How did it sound in the arena? Because like it feels like the kind of track that's made for a big sound system as opposed to like my shitty laptop speakers.
The whole arena was shaking because everyone was doing the yes chant. But as soon as we left, I was like, that was like a fucking fantastic theme song. And my friends didn't agree with me, but I liked it. It sounded great.
Yeah.
I wanted him to come out to the final countdown. It didn't happen. And Ross, you know how it hurts my heart.
Well, I want to shout out former commentator Lenny Leonard. He's still commentating, actually. I shouldn't say former. Lenny Leonard of Ring of Honor and various other independents. The cost of Final Countdown by Europe, Daniel Bryan's original song for Ring of Honor, is about $250,000 for licensing fees, which I don't care how many sports teams you own, is too much for an entrance song. Flight of the Valkyries, however, is public domain because it's over 100 years old and it's classical music, and arguably it's Daniel Bryan's bigger, more popular song. Like, don't get me wrong, Ring of Honor had a lot of people following when he had Final Countdown. But when he had Flight of the Valkyries, he had people in NFL stadiums doing yes chants that he wasn't there for. So I think they were smart going with Flight of the Valkyries. I think they're smart kind of taking that yes chant that WWE can't trademark because it's just the word yes. It does feel like Flight of the Valkyries was the right call. I hate that I'm right because I know a lot of people wanted Final Countdown, but never doubt the power of the draw of public domain. Public domain music always wins out. That's why Macho Man was Pomp and Circumstance. Because he could use it wherever the hell he wanted to, and all he had to do was just re-record it, and you own the trademark. But it definitely feels like this was the big momentum shift, because not only has WWE lost some big talents, in the case of guys like CM Punk or Adam Cole, they lost talents where they weren't able to do that thing they do where they bring someone in, give them a new name, and own all of the likenesses that they would have to then take out of WWE. Adam Cole's still allowed to be Adam Cole. And more importantly, he's still allowed to be Adam Cole, baby. So they don't have to censor him there. CM Punk's still allowed to be CM Punk. CM Punk's still allowed to be CM Punk with Living Colors Cult of Personality. And so you're finally seeing AEW no longer have to do parody. They don't have to do sound-alikes. They can just straight up be like, we're the place that has some of the top talent that WWE has seemingly let slip through their fingers. As Adam Cole said last night, even he didn't know that his contract was up when it was up. No one has followed up on this, but apparently everyone was under the impression that he had like 6 more months. And for a company that big, I gotta wonder what the hell's going on over there, because they have let some serious, serious talent slip through their fingers. The momentum feels like it's shifting. Last night's Raw was supposedly one of the best Raws ever. No one watched it, but like they focused on the tag division. It was Labor Day. I heard great things. No, look, here. SmackDown has momentum. NXT has momentum.
Nobody watched it, but you know.
Monday Night Raw, I follow along with through the people that have decided I'm going, there aren't Monday Night Raw viewers. There are wrestling journalists that have to cover Monday Night Raw, and then they sit there for 3 hours grumbling, going, I guess this show is happening. And that's the main discourse that I hear about Monday Night Raw. Whoa. And no, this was apparently.
Now, I saw some people talking about that. They're like, Raw. Like, yep. Come on, it's Monday Night Raw. You can't compare that to a pay-per-view.
Absolutely not. But you're not wrong. But it does feel like it does feel like the question of what does WWE have to do to kind of fight back against this turn of momentum. There, it seems like it's getting harder and harder to answer that question. I'm gonna throw it to you, Morgan, because you're pointing already. What would WWE have to do to switch this tide?
So I'll even go a step further than this. What did they book as their WWE Championship match last night? They book Bobby Lashley versus Randy Orton. I don't want to see another Randy Orton match. I love his work ethic, and I know what he's provided for the company and whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to try and swing the momentum anyway, any different way, give me something else, anything different. I don't want to see another Randy Orton Extreme Rules, whatever match. Like, that's not what I want to see. You push the envelope. I want to see you try to do something that is different, especially since we're rebranding NXT and whatever shiny thing. I don't even know what we're going to do. I don't want to talk about it. I don't care. I really don't. And I said it before, they lost me as a viewer a long time ago because of certain things that just were so, we said it before, AEW, I have faith in now because they're putting their money where their mouth is and saying, trust us, we're going to do this. We know what you want. Even when Tony Khan, when Punk debuted, everyone knew it. It was tongue in cheek, but we knew what was happening. WWE is used to being like, oh, Royal Rumble's coming up. You want Bryan Danielson's last guy? Here's Rey Mysterio. Go ahead. Here you go. Have fun. So it's just like the master of the mind games. Like, it's a trick to either keep us watching, but give me something different. I love Bobby Lashley. I love the title run. I really don't want to see you go against Randy Orton. I don't want to see that. I love that you focus on the tag division, but you need to also look at your contracts, and you need to sit down with your talent and be like, what do you think? Not guy who is creative booker or guy who is head of creative booker, but what do you think talent we need to do to draw people, because the talent is the reason why people are coming there, not because you are booking a show a certain way, right? That's just me.
No, you're not wrong. Like, don't get me wrong. I think AEW has done a good job at booking, but what is pulling people right now are the talent. What's pulling people is the idea that anything can happen, from big debuts like Adam Cole to little stuff like Jon Moxley was wearing a GCW hoodie during his entrance. I mean, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the fact that he's now, he's on TNT almost every week. He's a former champion, and he's also the GCW champion. And Ashley, you were there in Hoffman Estates this weekend when Jon Moxley beat Matt Cardona, the former Zack Ryder, for the GCW championship. I mean, they're letting these guys do whatever the hell they want. What was that moment like when Moxley walked into that arena?
So, are you talking about All Out or War
Games? No, I'm talking about Art of War Games, the GCW show on Saturday where Moxley won the title.
So, Cardona, of course, wrestled Frank the Clown first.
Yep. Shout out to Chicago's own.
Welcome.
No, Chicago. Truly Chicago's favorite heel, Frank the Clown. Everyone loves to watch him get his ass kicked.
So, you know, that happens and the match ends and we're like, this can't be it. Like, can't be it. People started leaving.
Yep.
And we're like, this has to be something else. And then, of course, G-Raver's music hit, I believe. Yep. And the people come out and Mox started wiggling and I'm like, it can't be. Like, I hope it is, but it can't be. And I was just waiting to get heartbroken again. And sure enough, it was. We didn't realize it was a match.
Okay.
I didn't know that the match, like, it was like a legit match. And then he hits him, he pins, they ring the bell and they crown him the new champion. And we're like, right, like the crowd lost it, but I didn't know that it was actually happening. I don't know if I was all the way in the back, so I don't know if, like, I just didn't hear it, but that was absolutely insane. And he just can do no wrong right now. I feel like
Mox is
on a whole nother level.
And he's on that level because, like, I hate to be this kind of anti-labor about it, because Tony Khan's letting him. Because the end of the day, when WWE is asked, hey, how do we get fans back? They go, well, bring back Lesnar. Maybe The Rock will be willing to do something in the spring. We've got some names we could bring in like that. Whereas with AEW, they seem to very much be like, if we let these guys, you know, go work for GCW, work for FSW, work for Impact, let them do what they love to do as long as they're making their TV dates. And it's really creating a bond that I feel like paid off at All Out. Like, All Out felt like the culmination of the past kind of couple of years of AEW setting up expectations. Tama, you look like you're ready to burst. What's on your mind?
I want to jump on this real quick.
Yep.
Now everybody's looking for a fight, right? Everybody's talking about momentum shift, the shift that's gone to AEW. I'm gonna just say this from my perspective. I'm in Japan, minding my own damn business, but looking out here in America, you see WWE, it does look like they're doing their own thing, not worrying. Mm-hmm. It's like not worrying about AEW or anybody else. It's just like, shoot, fly, don't bother me. Mm-hmm. Right? AEW is popping off, and I think the fans are just looking to, oh, this is war. They want that competition. They want AEW to be the one, but WWE is looking at it as like no competition whatsoever. Now, Look, WWE is WWE. They're like deep pockets, their connections, their resources. I think if they go to war, it's like how people want them to go to war, I don't think there'll be competition after that. I think we're looking at it like every move they're doing today, the shows that they're putting together is to counter what's happening in AEW today. I don't think that. I think they're just doing their own thing, minding their own business, and acting like this is not competition. Because I think WWE, if they really want to go to war, they'll go to war, and you'll know when they'll go to war. Right now, it doesn't. That's just me. I think.
Oh no, and I think you're spot on, because I feel like WWE also knows that they have some areas where they are better than AEW right now. Because yes, we're talking about all of the ways that AEW has taken their momentum, but let's talk about the fact that we are less than 72 hours removed from All Out, one of has been heralded as one of the greatest pay-per-views of the past 15 years. I've heard people say as good as WrestleMania X7. They're throwing out Wrestle Kingdoms. It really does seem like people believe this was a great show. It was a great show, but it has also left a lot of fans going, all right, where are the black people? Where are the women? Where is a little bit more of that representation?
Yep.
And over on WWE, your world champions right now are Bobby Lashley, mm-hmm. Samoa Joe, and Roman Reigns. So you've already got some pretty heavy representation there. Then you add whatever this hip-hop-fueled NXT rebrand is going to be. WWE is subtly coming to play. They're just not coming to play in the way that AEW is. Because AEW is making these big, bold moves. WWE just sticking to the stuff that has been working. Because, like, mm-hmm. Hit Row, working for them right now. Bobby Lashley, working. Roman Reigns, working overtime right now. Mm-hmm. And I think if they focus on that stuff, if they keep the bloodline as hot as it's been, It's still going to be a fight. It's still going
to
be something.
AEW has to keep it consistent. They have to consistently keep putting out the shows. No more exploding barbed wire match, death match. No more of that mm-hmm. dumb shit to make people talk shit about them. You have to know what you're doing. Keep to the stuff that works for you, you know, and get versatile and keep it consistent. Consistent mm-hmm. with keeping people happy and great shows. What they did it All Out. I don't buy pay-per-views. I don't.
Yep.
But I was like, I'm going to check it out because everybody was talking about it. And you got to keep that going. I'm minding my own damn business in Japan. I like this stuff. I'm just here storing the pop, and we'll see how it goes from here. But, you know, they got to keep it consistent. This is not a war. I don't care what anybody thinks. It's not a war. Not yet, at least. But if AEW keeps it consistent and just keeps on running, we're going to see one.
I agree. I agree with you. But this also harkens back to two things that I think they're doing very well. We glossed over a match that was on the card that we didn't even talk about. We didn't talk about MJF versus Jericho. We didn't talk about what that brought to the table. We didn't talk about how MJF and we talked a little bit about how MJF and QT are possibly two of the most hated people right now. That's consistency in that bit. But I agree with you. There isn't a consistency in week in, week out. Mm-hmm. They've got four shows now. Things are kind of, they're finding their groove. Now, alternatively, I'll think back to it. As much as I don't want to see a Randy Orton match versus Bobby Lashley, I'm sure that will draw people for them because there are people who are diehard Randy Orton fans. Mm-hmm. There are people who are just like, they have RKO tattooed on them. So that's great. I get it. Cool. That's great. So if it works for them, it works for them. What I don't like and what I love with New Japan is there's always going to be long-term storytelling, right? It's mm-hmm. long-term storytelling. We've talked about that before. And if either one of the two companies in America can get that, even Impact, if Impact can even get that right in terms of long-term storytelling, and Hook, that's going to win whoever this imaginary war is. I think both companies are trying to do their own thing where there's some people getting bumps in the ratings and some people are doing this and you're getting guys going over there, but they're trying to flex their muscles. You know, you have guys like Cardona who's doing every independent show, Impact, he did his AEW run. They're trying to figure out where their stride is now that they've left the big conglomerate, right? Mm-hmm. So everyone's trying to get out of this perception of I've been pigeonholed to do this. Let me see what I can do, right? That's what I want to see in terms of long-term storytelling is someone who finds their stride and runs with it the entire way.
Yeah. No, and it does feel like I still maintain that, like, I think Tom is right. The fans want this to be a war. I think maybe AEW wants this to be, I don't even know. I do believe that they are focused on their own product, but they do take just enough shots. And I'm like, absolutely. I'm not saying they shouldn't, but I think the people that are going to make this a war are the advertisers. Cause at some point people are going to notice the trend in the boardroom. At some point people are going to notice that even SmackDown, kind of trending downward at the moment, while AEW is trending up. And it's entirely possible AEW will plateau any day now, and they'll stay at a million something people, but that's not the way that the trends have been going. And so in like 2 or 3 years, when some of those ad deals come up, that's when the actual war will begin. Because right now, AEW is very comfortable. They got their TNT extension way earlier than they thought they would. WWE is very comfortable. They're making $1 billion. They're going back to Saudi Arabia. Like, their earnings are good. It's going to be when these ratings actually start to affect those earnings, that's when the war starts. That's when you're going to be able to start flying the flag and sounding the bugle. Right now, we're just building up. It's still
building. All right. You're right. It's building. I love it.
I'm still waiting on one war. I'm waiting on one war. And now, Tama, this is coming back to you. I want to see. I'm getting shook. All right, then.
No, you go ahead.
I'm waiting for Bullet Club versus the Elite.
Ooh.
I'm waiting for it. And we're all talking about it. And you and I know they're doing their thing and we don't care, but I want to see you beat the crap out of them.
He's got the G1 coming up, but I'm sure that's going to be in the back of his mind. but yeah, no, it does feel like it's going to be a very interesting fall. We're coming up on over an hour of it. Just a lot of wrestling to talk about. So I kind of want to,
I think we missed before. I'm sorry, Ross. Morgan said there was a match that we skipped over, which was, with Jericho and MJF. Great match. I love the finish. Like, I'm just going to backtrack a little bit just to go over.
Let's go for
it. I really enjoyed some of the matches. And coming from a wrestling point of view, I think this is something that I want to touch on just for the wrestlers out there. But that that finish was great. That with MJF and Chris Jericho, because it got people to bite. Mm-hmm. Everybody bit on it. And the creative way they did that was just like, it left, when it was done and Jericho won, everybody was real happy about it, because him losing would have been his way out, right? And nobody wanted that, so everybody expected him to win, but it didn't happen like that. You know, they thought it did. It was great storytelling. I love the way they put it together. And what was the other one? Bucks.
Hey. Bucks. Yep. No. Hey, you know what? We got to dive into this.
Yeah.
I gotta give my god.
Props is due. Yeah. Props is due towards the Bucks and the Lucha Bros. On their cage match. That was one of the best tag matches I've seen this year. And beautifully done. Mm-hmm. They just went balls out, you know, or alls out, whatever, you know, no pun intended. And so I really liked it. Now, as a wrestler, everything was executed beautifully, but there was just one little thing that I was like, ugh.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Phoenix, but the
Penta
from was it second or the top rope? He did his zero miedo to Matt.
I think it was the second. Yeah. When he did the Canadian Destroyer
from the top.
It was top rope. Yeah, it was Avalanche. Yeah.
That shit was devastating. I thought that was the finish. Now, a second later, Matt popped back up and they all fall around about it. And I couldn't, like, I understand it's a cage match. But, that was so beautifully done and so devastating that it could have been the finish. Now, I was thinking, how do you top that? Of course, somebody had to go all the way to the top of the cage to jump off, and all three of them. Psychology-wise, to the workers, to me, doesn't make sense, but it's a cage match. It's all out. I get it. Besides that, amazing match. I really big props to the Lucha Bros. I thought that was like super dope. Even after Penta had his wife and kids came up and hugged, my heart was like, oh shit, man, I can picture my kids in one of my matches. I was like, they got blood all over them. I was like, oh
yep. That was like
somebody
the best.
Took him to the back and wipe him up or some shit.
Personally, that was like that was the best visual storytelling of the night. They have that brutal ass match. The blood gets all over the title belts. I mean, those title belts were painted red by the end of that show. And so then Penta kissing both of his kids, they're like covered in his blood. Like you really got the vibe that this was a war. Like it really reminded me of those AAA cage matches where like it's not just about the title, it's about the pride, it's about the fight as much as the gold. Just a really beautiful moment. And if we're going to be talking about Jericho versus MJF, as the stats guy, I do got to bring up
let me just I see here on a Twitch chat, who's it said, have they evolved past Flip Monkeys, Tama? That's by Corey Fitz. Hey Corey, yep. No, there's still Flip Monkeys, Monkey Flips, whatever you want to call them. But it's not, that's not the point here. It's the style, right? It's their style that they were doing that matched the Lucha Bros style. And they, in my opinion, can only have that kind of like match in that kind of setting because their styles are very similar, but it's like American Lucha versus Mexican Lucha style, but very AEW style. It's very independent style.
It's a hybrid.
It was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing. So have they evolved past that? No, they're still that, but I liked it. I appreciated it. I appreciate what they did. So, hey, it's a style, man. It's wrestling.
Yeah.
I can enjoy it.
And look, I mean, there is that old saying, you know, eventually a monkey can write Shakespeare. Eventually, a flip monkey can also can write a great match. Like
monkey can wrestle.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. And it really was. I mean, it was an absolute show stealer. As the Bucks and the Lucha Brothers have kind of done it all out. The first all out event, they had a ladder match that definitely almost sent me to the hospital just watching it. I can only imagine how they felt. It was a brutal match. And MJF, the only two high-profile losses MJF has had so far are Moxley and Jericho, and on both of those, he's either gotten a visual pinfall, or in the case of Jericho, just an outright pinfall that got restarted. So they have really done a fantastic job of handling MJF, making sure that he means something. He is one of the few people who on the microphone, he means as much on the microphone as he does in the ring, thanks to the way that they have been treating him. I'll throw to you, Ashley. What did you kind of think of first Lucha Bros versus Young Bucks? I mean, you were there for that match. It had to have been crazy in that arena.
It was insane. Chicago loves the Lucha Bros. They were super over at All Out 2019. This was no different. Mm. I am thrilled that they won because I feel like the titles don't change hands enough, and especially with the tag division, it's, you have so much talent that I feel like they should bounce around a little bit more. So I'm really excited for the matchups that the Lucha Bros can have, and I'm hoping that at Arthur Ashe we might get Lucha Bros versus Proud and Powerful.
Fingers crossed. Belts,
I know, and maybe they'll be able to take the belt away. But that match, I mean, was crazy. That was one of my matches of the night because it's just to be expected. MJF and Jericho, I liked the match, but I am so over this feud. Like I mentioned this on one of the watch-alongs. I feel like it's been going on forever. And like, I just hope that this is it. Like, please, no more.
I'm going to say something that I don't think is going to be very popular, but if we're going to be speaking our hearts about All Out, I'm so tired of Judas. If I never hear that song again, it will be too soon. I don't know.
Me though. Cool. It was cool. Like I was on the cruise for the first moments. Like that was really special. And I think they had a really good thing going, but it's like, I'm just kind of over it right now.
Before I even started with that.
The crowd's enthusiasm for it got me into this. I don't know. I'm a snob, so it's not my favorite song in the world, but the crowd's enthusiasm got me into it. But now it does kind of feel more like when you go to church and it's like, well, we have to sing the hymns. It's not necessarily the, you know, It doesn't feel like this jovial moment of the crowd. It feels like, all right, everyone rise and sing Judas and be seated. Drain a bit of bubbly to all of you.
When he walked out without his music and people were singing it, was it last week or the week before? I forget.
Yeah,
he wasn't allowed to play his music and people were singing. I was like, oh no. I was like, oh shit, everybody knows this shit. I'm good.
No, he kind of had that
props for it. I give him props.
And especially this week with the guitarist that didn't quite match up with, like, I don't know, this week it felt like they kind of missed on the Judas entrance. I don't know, what do you think, Morgan? We're talking Jericho, we're talking Lucha Brothers, but what do you think of Judas?
First of all, I'm Jewish, so I don't know anything about him. Second of all, the guitar was ridiculous, but I thought the thing that stole it for me was the MJF countdown clock with Jericho's last match. That was hysterical. That was the greatest thing I've seen in quite some time. And I like Judas. I can definitely do without it every week.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's the every week that's getting to me. I don't know. I'm interested to see what's next for Jericho now that he's going to be on his victory lap. Cause like, I'll be very clear. He signed his 3-year contract in February of 2019. And so that's going to put him at February of 2022 when it comes up. So we're coming up on there. He's either going to re-sign with the company or he's not, but that's going to be in the back of everyone's mind for the next 3 to 6 months.
Now, counterpoint to the Judas thing, I will eventually get tired of people seeing Cult of Personality as well. Because it has happened before. And it will happen again. So wrestling themes ebb and flow. The new Adam Cole theme song, or whatever that blew me away. That blew me away.
So. No, and like I said, I like the trap remix of Flight of the Valkyries. I just, if we're talking Jericho, I had to bring it up. I had to speak my truth on that one. But no, I'm with you. Cult of Personality will also wear out its welcome eventually. As I've said on Twitter, AEW's, they finally shaken that past week where whether it was Dynamite, whether it was Rampage, every advertisement was like, we're going to have CM Punk, we're going to have Daniel Garcia, and we're going to have others. Like, it was very, they clearly had All Out as their destination for the past few weeks. And now that All Out's going to be in the rearview mirror, I'm excited to see what kind of road lays ahead of them, especially with Arthur Ashe, Cincinnati, Full Gear in November. They got a lot of crazy stuff coming up. Then you add the G1 Climax coming up September 18th through October 21st. I want to say is the date. That's going to be a hell of a tournament. We got a big fall coming up, folks. I'm done looking backwards. Let's look ahead, Ashley. What are you most excited for over the next three-ish months in wrestling?
So personally, I have the AEW Newark show coming up, and then Arthur Ashe, and then GCW in October. So I've got a busy schedule, but G1 is always a good time. Full Gear is an interesting pay-per-view because I feel like it falls at kind of like a lull period. So especially getting from Full Gear to Revolution is always, it feels like a long gap. So I'm interested to see where we end up going there, but it's an exciting time.
Hell yeah. All right. How about you, Morgan? What are you excited for in the next 3 months as we head down this road?
Well, as I said before, I'm looking hopefully to catch Minoru Suzuki in person. I really want that. I'm excited to see the G1. I'm excited to see Tama mix it up. We steered a little away from that, but I'm excited to see Tama mix it up in the G1. I'm excited to see, you know, I would like, as I think every Islander and everybody listening would like to see Tama go the full distance and get the flag and the trophy and get the singles belt. Cause I mean, we've been talking about it for a long time. So even maybe, you know, even just a run of Tanahashi, if you get the W over him, we get the heavyweight strap on you, we get the United States heavyweight strap on you, anything, you know, something, come on, man. That's what I'm excited for.
That's what I was about to bring up. Not only is the G1, but on that road to the G1, you got the U.S. heavyweight champion in your sights. Like, it could be a very interesting few months for you, Tom. Are you stoked?
Kill Tana. That was for you, Karen. I'll see you on the Twitch chat.
Happy birthday, Karen. Happy birthday. All right. Well, this has been a supersized episode of Thomas Island. I thank you all for joining us in the Twitch. I thank you, Ashley, Morgan, Tama. Thank you for joining us for this marathon. Ashley, where can people find you if you want them to find you throughout those plugs?
Oh, thank you. So I am on Twitter at Ashley is Dashing as my personal account. I do run a podcast at Dojo and Dynamite, which covers New Japan, AEW, and anything else that me and my boyfriend want to talk about. And those episodes drop weekly.
Hell yeah. And Morgan, where can people find you if they want to find you?
So I am Morgan Epstein on Facebook and on Twitter. I am Kicking_myself. I am also a podcaster, and we drop episodes every Monday. It is a Magic the Gathering, card gaming, and wrestling deep dive for everything. So we actually have a tournament coming up here in Maryland that Dan Housen introduced, which was really sweet the other day, called the Legacy Pit. So I'm going to shout them out really quickly. But if you want to come and check us out, the podcast is Kicking Myself, MTG. We just shoot shit. Have a couple drinks, hang out, and talk a bunch of bullshit. So it's real fun.
I like that.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Like that. All right, Tama, where can everyone find you?
All right. Hey, guys, you can find me on Twitter, Tama_Tonga, or Instagram, the good bad guy, Tama Tonga. And look, Morgan, Ashley, get your TikTok up. You got to get TikTok. Y'all want to find me on TikTok? I don't have a lot yet, but I'm going to get started, all right? Especially in this G1. I'll be putting up a lot of shit. Tama Tonga, 1111. Really?
Hell yeah. Hell
Ross,
yeah.
Ross, hey.
No, you're fine. I was just gonna say, don't forget, G1 starts September 18th. Your first foe is going to be Sonata. You've been shit-talking him for the past, like, year on this podcast. Real excited to see how that goes down. I'll be covering it for WrestleZone. Head on over to @RossWBermanIV. At Ross Berman IV on Instagram and at WrestleZone.com on Twitter. Thank you all again for joining us. We'll be back same time next week. If you head on over to the Patreon, patreon.com/Thomas Island, hit that subscribe to the Islander tier. We're going to be back on that happy hour train as the G1 is going on and as this big fall comes up. Thank you again for tuning in. We hope you all have a good evening.
Thanks, guys. Y'all enjoy your week.
Thank you for listening to this week's Thomas Island. Find more great Thomas Island content like the Shotgun series, weekly happy hour Zoom calls with Tama, video versions of the podcast, and much, much more at patreon.com/Thomas Island and visit @Thomas Island on Instagram and Twitter.